Good morning. Expanding the REACH program to offer more middle school kids after-school enrichment plus anti-bullying bills are just a few measures from the Keiki caucus moving in the legislature. And then there are the Kupuna bills aimed at long-term care. Today, one of the key senators in both caucuses, Suzanne Shun Oakland, joins us. And later in the hour, Neil Conan weighs in on North Korea's latest missile launch. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And I'm Chris Vandercook. It's amazing how much of New Orleans you can recreate in Honolulu if you take the trouble. And that's what Mark Tirone has done with tonight's Mardi Gras celebration. And Waimea, a town on Kauai, needs a whole week to go through its calendar of events at its annual celebration. Puni Patrick will fill us in on preparations.
It's Mardi Gras February 9th. Stay here for the conversation. Coming up next, after the news.
Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vandercook. Happy Mardi Gras, Beth Ann.
Good morning. And for a lot of people, they're already into rocking and rolling all night tonight.
That's right. That's right. We're going to have some musical reminders interspersed throughout the show that today is Mardi Gras.
Oh, you think?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. But first, we're going to talk about a little more serious stuff. Now, the two ends of life experience are getting a lot of attention this legislative session. The Keiki and Kupuna caucuses have respectively introduced measures aimed at expanding after-school enrichment to offering help for long-term care, and they have a senator common to both. Senator Suzanne Shun Oakland is the chair of the Senate Committee on Human Services. We recently spoke about many of the bills on the spectrum, from school to post-retirement years. We started with a look at the positioning of this year's long-term care fund bill and the bill carried over from last session to have a designated caregiver trained to continue the care of a person released from the hospital.
The two bills that may be of concern is the CARE Act bill that you mentioned, and it's called the Discharge Policies Bill. Basically, what the CARE Act was hoping to achieve for caregivers, to support our caregivers in Hawaii, was to require hospitals to provide patients with the opportunity to designate a caregiver upon entry to the hospital. It also required that the hospitals have the designated caregiver information in the patient's medical records, and a requirement to notify the caregiver before the discharge occurs that the patient will be discharged. And then finally, to make sure that the hospital offers the opportunity for training, just in case the caregiver is not feeling comfortable with the transition of their loved one into their home and not having enough information or hands-on practice to do some of the more complicated types of care. So we had something called the Caregiver Training Legislative Task Force, which was made up of legislators. We met over the interim, the legislative interim, from May through December last year. And based on that, there has been legislation introduced. One bill in particular, called Discharge Policies, basically captures all of those points that was in the CARE Act. And it has moved, I believe, out of the Senate Health Committee already. So AARP and many others had come to testify, and my understanding was there was modification to assure that any patient that is being discharged, at least their designated caregiver has an opportunity to be offered at least the training and so forth. So seems like there is some compromise that has occurred. I'm hopeful, very hopeful, that we will come out successfully this year with something that will support our caregivers better.
And Senator Shun Oakland, what about the fact that hospitals were dead set against it?
Apparently, the hospitals actually, in speaking with member hospitals, they are very concerned about caregivers. And I think internally to the Healthcare Association of Hawaii, I think there has been discussion. So I believe that the hospitals, you know, by federal CMS rules are supposed to do most of these things. We just have put it into a statutory framework within our Hawaii statutes to fulfill those obligations.
And what about Senator Baker's bill that's going to be heard?
We do have a long-term care financing bill, and I was co-sponsor on that. I actually had introduced, for many years, this long-term care financing effort. And the most recent one basically is reflecting the most current actuarial study that the legislature authorized a few years ago. What it would do is increase to 0.5% of the general excise tax monies that would then go into a long-term care trust fund that would be accessible to every one of us that has filed tax returns for the past 10 years. And if we pass the funding mechanism, which is a general excise tax 0.5% increase, then within the 5-year period through the actuarial study, we should have enough to start being able to provide long-term care services to anyone that has 2 activity of daily living challenges or more. As long as they continue to file their tax returns, that allows people access to a $70 per day amount to use in whatever way they feel is necessary to support their long-term care needs.
So let's transfer over to talking about what's going on with the Keiki Caucus. A bill that was carried over from last year would require that the Office of Youth Services coordinate a 5-year Safe Places Youth Pilot Program.
Yes.
We hear so often that, especially with homeless youth, that there isn't a place for them to be, or youth that feel that they're in danger or at risk. Is this bill already in conference?
It is from last year. So we're hoping, that there will be very positive consideration for this measure. I know Children and Youth Summit, which has happened for the last 22 years now, where youth advocates, children, and youth come to the state capitol to identify top 10 priorities every year. Bullying and safe places has been at the top for the last, I would say, 8 years. So with regards to safe places, it truly is something that not necessarily homeless youth initiated. It's actually some of our young people whose friends or even themselves, they just want places where they can feel comfortable. If something comes up, at least there are people that are knowledgeable, that have maybe counseling background or are knowledgeable about community resources to support them in whatever the circumstances. So it's not necessarily for children that are at high risk even. It could be the YMCAs, the Boys and Girls Clubs. It could be 7-Eleven or McDonald's where there's a 24-hour kind of operation, even some of our utility companies. Where in other states they have a safe place program, it's basically coordinating a lot of our existing resources across the state and doing some training that is necessary so that people know how to help our youth, but also to create that safe, nurturing environment for them.
And what about the part of the bill that would allow them to consent to services? What services are we specifically talking about?
It's not as common a circumstance, but when there is a young person that needs to stay overnight somewhere, we don't have necessarily that option for young people to stay in a safe place overnight and then be able to get the assessments that they need. So this would, in part, pay for some of the nonprofits that already provide space for other types of situations to also help young people that are needing some care. I know know, one of the other things that young people have really expressed is having very positive after-school programs. I know that we use some of our temporary assistance to needy families monies for what we call Uplink, that services, I think, 28 schools, middle schools. And the REACH, or Resources for Enrichment, Athletics, Culture, and Health, which Lieutenant Governor Tsutsui has been advocating for, that is also in our package this year, to provide additional after-school programs for our middle schools. We want to, at some point, besides our elementary schools, through the A-plus program, have all of our middle schools also have very positive, enriching after-school, before-school programs.
Of all the bills, and there's so many more that we've yet to be able to talk about just in the interest of time, is there a top priority list for you that's absolutely your core of the core that would be non-negotiable that you would like to see put through?
Well, the caucus package, it's based on the caucus's priorities. So Safe Places, that was the number one identified bill for a number of years by our young people. So I'm hopeful that will pass. I know that after school programs has been an ongoing commitment of our Keiki caucus, so I do hope that the REACH bill passes. And preschool, early learning, we definitely need to have a universal options for our youngest children. So we're hoping that the preschool open doors subsidies of $6 million will also be supported. Governor actually put it in his budget. Same with the REACH program. There's monies in there. Ideally, it's good to keep the money in the state budget bill, which is House Bill 1700. We have these bills just in case that does not occur, that it's not in the base budget, but we're hopeful that it will stay in the supplemental budget bill.
Well, we're going to be watching those bills, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to talk as session progresses and see what happens with them.
Sure.
Thank you so much for all the time this morning. Senator Suzanne Sean Oakland is the chair of the Senate Committee on Human Services. She also serves on the Education, Transportation and Energy, and Ways and Means Committees. Listening to the conversation on statewide member supported HPR2. It's now 8:16. Coming up, coordinating an evening of Fat Tuesday revelry in Honolulu's Chinatown. But first, a Mardi Gras backyard quiz.
Umulokai, Ulanai, Umau, Ukaholabe, Ohamai.
And before today's Mardi Gras festivities kick off, we thought we would tease your mind with a word puzzle on the morning's backyard quiz. A little bit of background. Fat Tuesday, of course, is what Mardi Gras means. It's a celebration that takes place during the last day before Ash Wednesday, marks the period of fasting that comes with Lent. In the U.S., Mardi Gras is most often associated with New Orleans, Louisiana, where every year residents and visitors come together on a massive scale. And as our next guest will tell you, Honolulu has a growing Mardi Gras tradition. So for today's quiz, we thought we'd ask you to solve this simple word puzzle. The place name Honolulu, Hawaii, and New Orleans, Louisiana, share seven letters. Can you tell us which four they do not share? No fair writing it down. Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. And the first one to get it right gets a T-shirt.
Thank you. Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Tory Richard Limited, celebrating 60 years of design for the island lifestyle. Tory Richard is proud to support local community news, public affairs, and talk programming on Hawaii Public Radio.
Mark Tyrone is an events coordinator. He's been working on tonight's downtown Honolulu Mardi Gras celebration for months now. We're betting he has just enough adrenaline left to get him through the evening. And as Mark knows, Mardi Gras is more than just another party. It's a journey into New Orleans culture in music, dance, costumes, and, of course, food. He's been working to make sure tonight is all of the above, and he's with us in our studio. You got some energy left, Mark?
Thank you, Chris. You hit it the nail on the head. Definitely riding on adrenaline this morning.
You're and sleep for
excited.
A week, right?
Sleep very well after tonight. And that's the point, is celebrate before Lent begins tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. As part of this whole putting the celebration together, you've learned a lot about how it's done in New Orleans, right?
Yes, and I've been there for their 12th night celebration, which kicks off the Mardi Gras festivities every year. 12 days after Christmas is when they begin their Mardi Gras festivities. And just fantastic traditions. You know, when I think of Mardi Gras traditions in New Orleans, I think of passionate celebration and community. Yeah. It's really everybody in the city gets involved. It's not just some wild and crazy thing that just wild and crazy people go to.
Right.
It's a community event at all ages and all different backgrounds about having fun, you know, with just the ultimate celebration with costuming and food and music and lots of different styles, but really just giving it all you have and celebrating.
In New Orleans, the social clubs, the various social clubs throughout the city, have been working for months on their costumes, on their dances, on their music, right?
Yes, and you know, most of them will have a Mardi Gras ball, which is a big fundraiser, and another celebration where they'll raise funds for their costumes and for their different parade things. Really a year-round activity there with all the planning. And we have some of that here. Tonight, one of our groups has some great choreographed dance and amazing costumes they made just for this event tonight. They spent nearly $1,000 on each costume with all the sequins and all the feathers and put them together themselves. So we have a nice tradition going here as well.
Well, there's no such thing as a subdued Mardi Gras costume, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Some of my favorites are the Mardi Gras Indians in New Orleans. You know, they're just the most elaborate costumes I've ever seen. Just that so many feathers and huge, and some of them are three-dimensional as far as, you know, they'll come out. It won't just go up. It'll actually come out. And today is the day where they, you know, do their biggest marches, and starting literally at sunrise with the percussion ensembles lining up outside the big chief's houses and come down in the new suit that they made just for this year and go on their marches.
There's something great about an event where the whole idea is to cut loose, right?
For sure, we need that. You know, it's an important part of everyone is to embrace that, and that's really the foundation of what I see as Mardi Gras, and in Hawaii we and I think in New Orleans as well, cut loose with aloha. You know, it's absolutely friendly, great place to meet people, and just let your hair down and enjoy whatever food you want, whatever dance you want, and to get dressed up and to just to make it that much easier to embrace things. The costumes are so great at removing social barriers, and that's something you see a lot tonight. You meet more people, and it's just a more engaged, connected celebration.
Well, once you have all the other trappings, the costumes, the music, the dance, you can't hold on to your reserve.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that's probably a big reason why where the costuming came from. I haven't read anything about it, but absolutely has that big impact, and it's a great thing.
You see that on Halloween. It's almost as if it's met a need of people to sort of jump out of their identities a little bit.
Exactly. And there's the creativity there. There's an enthusiasm it brings out of you. And that's something, one of the things I love so much about Hawaii and Halloween is the spirit that we put into our costuming. And, you know, we were talking a little earlier, a lot of average, you know, if you looked at the median population they're not necessarily creating art often.
Yeah.
And so costume is a great way. It's absolutely, you know, you're creating, making that piece, and there's a special energy you connect with inside, a special pride, and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, as we were saying earlier, that's something I bemoan about modern life, that it takes us away from making colorful things just because we want to.
Yep, exactly. So tonight's one of those chances to shine with that creativity, and you see it. We have lots and lots of revelers that come down in their fantastic outfits, and you know we're in different venues tonight, but we have different groups marching from venue to venue that you can march along with. Reggie Padilla is leading a band, Reggie Padilla and the Stellar Bean Brass Band. You know, one of our top local musicians, great saxophone player that you'll see tonight. But also, you know, great keyboardists, all around musicians. So
this is a standing up, walking around brass band.
Exactly. The first year, he actually had Noel Okimoto on snare, marching around with him, and he's put together. You know, he plays with the Royal Hawaiian Band.
Sure,
a lot of great groups in town. So he's put together a fantastic brass band. They're going to be playing the traditional New Orleans music. And going from venue to venue. And we also have the Brazilian percussion ensembles, the big, very loud percussion groups with the deep surdo drums, and samba dancers with them performing. So lots of costuming and lots of energy.
Well, Mark, I looked it up. New Orleans is like 4,208 miles from here.
Right on.
So the challenge is to recreate that atmosphere. But you sound as if you've gone a long way toward that.
I think we have a good thing going. You know, it's had great community support, and the artists have supported really well as well. You know, and it's your last chance to have fun on Mardi Gras Day here in Hawaii with our time zone. So that's something special as well.
I'm feeling a sense of urgency just hearing you. And of course, Beth Ann and I have the advantage of seeing you because you're wearing a top hat decorated with fleur-de-lis, Mardi Gras beads.
I couldn't be here this morning without bringing all my Mardi Gras energy.
It wouldn't have made sense. I mean, it has to all come together.
There we go. It feels good. It's great to have a reason to get dressed up and get the spirit going.
This year's more indoor than some of your past events have been, right?
That's right. We've got seven core venues, starting from downtown at Square Barrels, running all the way down into Chinatown at Next Door. And it's something different in each place. So if you visit the Conversations Facebook page, we can have a schedule up there. We list everything that's going to be at each venue and when the performances are. We've got everything from a Zydeco band at Square Barrels with Larry Spalding, otherwise known as Captain Grigri, tonight. Mm-hmm. He's going to have one of his accordions there. To Goodfoot, Jason Taglinetti from here at Hawaii Public Radio.
Sure.
He does the live mixing for them. It's a really great up-and-coming funk band. It's going to be playing at Next Door. A great samba group with Rogério. He was here on the Brazilian Experience this weekend, and he's got his band down at the Arts at Mark's Garage. So it's one of those things. There's a great 30 minutes of entertainment about at all these different venues. So probably more than you could really fit into one night. So if you looked at the schedule, just pick out what looks the best and stop in.
Well, you know, were we to recite all the different things that are going on, there wouldn't be time for anything else, would there?
There wouldn't. That's why, you know, you may have noticed I stayed away from that. There really is a lot on offer. It's good to check out the schedule.
Mark, thanks very much for coming in. It's good to see you.
Thank you, Chris.
Mark Tirone is the coordinator of tonight's Chinatown Mardi Gras celebration in downtown Honolulu's Arts District at a variety of different venues. And you can find out more, as Mark said, on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
New England's heroin epidemic has been raging for years. Now that the politicians have landed in New Hampshire, addiction is finally a campaign issue.
It's a little offensive to me that the big politicians are talking about it like somehow they're all over this.
One New Hampshire family's near-death experience with addiction and recovery. I'm Todd Zwillick. Join me in New Hampshire next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and Public Radio International.
This morning at 9, right after The Conversation.
HPR selects and purchases programs from National Public Radio, American Public Media, and many content providers. Our station members have followed the money and realized that the trail starts and ends with them. Our thanks to these enlightened individuals, Karen Sherman of Kihei, Michiko Sato of Kailua Kona, and Craig Robinson of Honolulu. And now, how about adding your name to that list? Call us during business hours at 955-8821 to find out about sustaining your public radio station. And thanks. This session, there are two bills based on recommendations from a review of penal codes that happens every 10 years. The fate of the progressive proposals will be a good measuring stick for where Hawaii stands in terms of its willingness to reform the criminal justice system. Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair has a reality check. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
Well, we know one person who's very excited about all of this, and that would be Judge Stephen Aum.
Right. He's one of the people that was a member of this task force that reviewed, 750 pages of criminal statutes here in the state. They range from everything from, jaywalking all the way up to murder. The idea is to streamline the penal code, to make it smarter on crime. And Judge Aum thinks that there are some very good possibilities that this thing is going to make it through. Now, having said that, there are others, some who were also involved with that task force, that are worried that some of the recommendations that have made it in there weren't what they were thinking would, in fact, make the final cut.
And why?
They're raising a little bit of a stink. It's in particular coming from prosecutors. Let me give you two examples. One of the proposals is to take away mandatory sentencing for most methamphetamine-related offenses. They would make it the same as cocaine and heroin. That's one concern. The reason why it is concern is because meth, as you know, has been a very big problem here. And another one would raise the threshold for a felony theft from $300 to $750. In other words, it wouldn't be a felony unless it was at the higher figure. The objection there is that $300 is still something substantial, but then are you really factoring in the cost of living and inflation and so forth? So these are two sticking points, several actually in the bill. It is huge. It's 135 pages long, both the House version and the Senate version. As Karl Rhodes, the chair of House Judiciary, said, look, even he doesn't like everything that's in there, but there's a lot of stuff he thinks that most people can probably live with.
And the last time that we looked at this was 10 years ago. How much change
right.
has been in between that is at all suggesting that we're moving to reform, or have things just sort of rolled over and been pretty much the same for the last several decades?
I think reforming the criminal justice system has been something that is important nationally. You've seen other states moving towards finding ways to make things easier and cheaper. Even here in Hawaii, justice reinvestment, I know we've reported on that as well, finding ways to make sure that do you really need to hold certain people in prison for so long? Can you parole them, put them on probation? Is there a way to free up prison space and bring down cost? So I think it's all part of a bigger discussion. But the main thing is this does happen every 10 years, and there are a lot of things in there that at least stakeholders in this task force feel could be revised, streamlined is the word they're using more than anything.
All right, we know we're going to be hearing more about that as we move through, but yeah, two really, really interesting bills. And if you can get through all 135 pages, all the better. Thanks very much, Chad. Talk to you in the morning.
Thanks, Beth Ann.
Chad Blair reports for Civil Beat and joins us every day for a reality check. And now continuing with a story that made headlines this weekend and also last month. Now, you may remember that in January, North Korea tested what it said was a hydrogen bomb, prompting international criticism and talk of new sanctions. Last week, North Korea launched what it said was a satellite on top of a long-range rocket. That brought even more criticism and more talk of new sanctions, and little sign that anything will change Kim Jong-un's ambition to become a full-fledged nuclear power with missiles aimed at Hawaii and the West Coast. News analyst Neil Conan joins us now from his Macnut Farm on the Big Island, as he does most Tuesdays. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
Now, some say this latest missile launch was timed to the celebrations of the Lunar New Year. Others say it looks more like Groundhog Day, the same exact pattern over and over again. Now, last month we talked about this after the bomb test. The House is now pressing for sanctions. Are there any sanctions yet? Has anything really changed?
No new sanctions, at least not yet. Talks continue. President Obama spoke with Chinese President Xi Jinping last week, just before this missile launch. But we seem to be in this holding pattern where China and Russia are unwilling to go along with much more than denunciations. They both talk of, you know, gross violations of Security Council resolutions and regrets, but they don't want to do anything that might destabilize the situation.
So wait a minute, don't nuclear explosions and missile tests destabilize the situation?
Indeed they do, and that's the point the U.S. is trying to make here, that North Korea is not over that weapons threshold yet, in other words, a deliverable system, but every test, every missile launch brings it closer to real nuclear weapons capability, and that's when things would get really dangerous.
Other than talking, what's President Obama actually doing?
Well, it looks like there may have been a real shift in his thinking. For many years now, U.S. policy toward North Korea was described as strategic patience. No new carrots, particularly after all the times North Korea has reneged on previous agreements, but no new sticks either. Let's see what this new leader is like. Let's work with China. Let's see if he might want to open his economy and his country to the outside world. Well, the bomb test last month seems to have put an end to all of that. Ever since, the U.S. and South Korea and Japan have all said we need to do something to change North Korea's behavior.
But other than words, though, really, what are they doing that's different?
Well, Secretary of State Kerry was in Beijing last month, just after the bomb test, and he publicly is an important word here, publicly told the Chinese if they don't agree to tough new sanctions, the U.S. and its allies will take steps on their own, steps that China is not going to like. For starters, South Korea and maybe Japan would deploy an anti-ballistic missile system called THAAD. Every time this has come up before, China says this system is a threat to China's security. Well, China is South Korea's most important trading partner, but President Park Chung-hee clearly feels burned. She expended a huge effort wooing China with the goal of getting influence over its North Korea policy. Then, after the bomb explosion, when push came to shove, President Xi would not even take her phone call. So the U.S. and South Korea have now formally opened talks on deploying THAAD in South Korea. Japan may follow.
So how does this system compare with, say, the Patriot missiles that some of us remember from the first Gulf War?
Much longer range. The Patriots are still out there. They have been improved over the years. But these are they are point defense systems. They cover up. They defend a footprint of maybe 30 to 50 miles. THAAD, which stands for Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, the THAAD system covers something like 200 miles. And these are mobile systems. They're mounted on big trucks, essentially, 8 launchers per battery. But what China seems most concerned about is the radar system that comes along with it. There's part of the radar is forward deployed to detect and track missile launches. If you put that right on the 38th parallel, it will be able to monitor missiles not just in North Korea, but deep into China as well.
And that's one thing that China really wouldn't like.
No. And the other step we're hearing about is secondary sanctions. That means not just sanctions on North Korean companies, but on any company that does business with those North Korean companies. As a practical matter, that means Chinese companies, and that would hurt. These are the kind of sanctions that proved effective with Iran. This the U.S. also can do on its own. It doesn't need to go through the U.N. We're not to that point yet, but that's what Secretary Kerry was talking about in Beijing.
So what makes North Korea so important to China that it would risk relations with South Korea, much less with the U.S.?
Well, that's kind of the million-dollar question. China clearly disapproves of young Kim. President Xi has yet to visit Pyongyang. Kim has not been invited to Beijing. After Secretary Kerry's visit, a senior Chinese official did go to Pyongyang to tell the North Koreans not to go ahead with this missile launch. Obviously, that failed, and that's a humiliation. It's a slap in the face from North Korea to China. There was a survey, this is interesting, on Weibo, that's the Chinese equivalent to Twitter, which asked, would you support a U.S. military strike to take out North Korea's nuclear weapons program, and over 60% of those who responded said they would. Now, we can't take that as a reflection of public opinion overall, and certainly not of opinion of the Communist Party leadership. The poll was quickly taken down by censors. But it does suggest that public support in China for North Korea is less than overwhelming. In terms of why they there's communist solidarity. These are comrades in arms from the Korean War. There's sort of an ideological question, you know, if Mao Zedong would defend North Korea, how can Xi Jinping do any less? There's some concern that real sanctions would make North Korea turn on its old ally and become a hostile state right on its border. But what you hear most is fear of a North Korean collapse, which might well be very bloody, which could send millions of refugees across the border into China, and which could lead to a unified Korea, a pro-American Korea right on China's border. And so far, nothing that the U.S. and its allies have done or even threatened to do seems to convince China that it's willing to risk that.
You're making a good argument for them, but if South Korea and maybe Japan were to deploy the anti-missile system, could we see a true arms race now?
I think we are seeing an arms race already on the level of conventional weapons. China's buildup continues, particularly its naval buildup. The U.S. is talking about basing a second aircraft carrier battle group in the Western Pacific. Of course, there's already one in Japan. Australia is buying new submarines and new ships. Japan's defense budget was just hiked up. The U.S. is about to go back into the Philippines. Now, that's all conventional weapons. Some people in South Korea say, you know, we can no longer rely on the United States for strategic defense, and we should go ahead and develop nuclear weapons of our own. So far, that's just talk. But if that ever happened, that would be a major change.
Okay, so for the moment, let's just end that part of our conversation there. But I cannot let you go away without a quick question on the activities of today. What you think might happen in New Hampshire?
I'm predicting snow in New Hampshire today.
Thank you very much.
Well, I couldn't distract you with Armageddon. All right, I think Donald Trump is going to win. But by less than some of the polls suggest. I do not think he gets 30% of the Republican vote. And I'm guessing that John Kasich and Marco Rubio come in second and third, I think in that order. Bernie Sanders wins the Democratic primary, I think, by double digits. So buckle up for a long march to the nomination.
Okay, now, before we even say goodbye, I want to ask you about one more thing. Michael Bloomberg, billionaire former mayor of New York, he says he's thinking about a run. Do you think we're actually going to see that happen with a third party?
Well, Mayor Bloomberg has made it pretty clear that he does see an opening if Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders get the nominations. So, not likely, but maybe. That old Chinese expression, we live in interesting times.
Exactly. And some of us are getting so wrapped up in them being so very interesting, and we will do that more when we talk next. Thanks, Neil.
Talk to you next week, Bethann.
News analyst Neil Conan joins us most Tuesdays from the farm, and you can also hear his Pacific News Minutes right here on Hawaii Public Radio.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Hawaii Pacific University, presenting the 2016 Presidential Lecture Series on Global Leadership and Sustainability, beginning today at 5:30 p.m. hpu.edu/presidential.
And now getting back to the lighter side with our backyard quiz question for this morning. Now, earlier we told you a bit about Mardi Gras and gave you a word puzzle to think over. Mardi Gras, which means Fat Tuesday, is a celebration that takes place on the last day that many are allowed to indulge prior to Ash Wednesday, marking the first day of fasting that comes with Lent. In the U.S., New Orleans, Louisiana is well known for its extravagant Mardi Gras celebrations that bring residents and lots of visitors together to celebrate the occasion. For our second guest on the show today told you that Honolulu has developed its own Mardi Gras tradition in recent years. And so for today's quiz, we asked you to solve a little word puzzle. The name Honolulu, Hawaii, and New Orleans, Louisiana share seven letters, but we wanted to know if you could name which four letters those names don't share. And nobody could. But here's the answer. They are the letters H, R, E, and S. So we'll keep our t-shirt and you go have some fun for Mardi Gras, and we'll all get back here tomorrow and have another run at the backyard quiz. It's now 8:48.
We obviously have celebrations on our mind this morning, and each year about this time, the town of Waimea in West Kauai goes all out. That means a two-day ho'olalea, a film festival, a festival to honor Kauai's last king, a rodeo, and plenty more. Puni Patrick is one of its coordinators. She joins us this morning. Good morning, Puni.
Aloha kakahiaka from Kauai. Aloha.
You been having a good time putting all this together?
Absolutely. It's been incredible fun. I love watching all of the community get together. Everyone's really enthusiastic, and Waimea is a buzz.
What makes it a Waimea celebration? You know, what are the qualities of your town that you want to be brought out in this celebration?
Our town is really close-knit, and we really enjoy being with each other, and we get so busy, you know, living in Hawaii and sometimes working multiple jobs just to afford to live here.
Sure.
That it's really wonderful that we can come together for an annual event. This is our 39th annual. So everyone pretty much keeps it on their calendar, keeps it free, so we can come together and reconnect. It's after the holidays, and it's, you know, a time for us to support a lot of the nonprofit groups in our town who are looking to raise money for the rest of the year.
Some of them being who, Puni?
Well, like the Lions Club.
Mm-hmm.
They have a food booth at our two-day ho'olalea on the 19th and 20th, and they sell a smoked meat plate. And the money that they raise from that, they purchase all of the Little League uniforms for the kids in Waimea.
So it all kind of, everything kind of feeds into everything else is what it sounds like.
Absolutely. And being a small town, you know, whenever one nonprofit group has a fundraiser, we're going to the same businesses, right, and the same people for Kokua.
Uh-huh.
So the West Kauai Business and Association, they felt, well, let's put on one big fundraiser and give everybody the opportunity to raise money. So it started off as a weekend event, and now it's, you know, blossomed into 8 full days of activities.
Well, you keeping that going with things like a celebration of your history.
Yes. King Kaumualii, who was our last king on Kauai, on the west side, he had a heiau, and the area is called Pa'ula'ula.
Uh-huh.
Many people refer to it as Russian Fort.
Yeah.
And, so he relocated there from Wailua, and that way he could see all of the ships coming in, and he wanted to make sure he had first dibs on getting the cannons off of ships.
Yes.
He was really concerned about protecting the island from Kamehameha, who was knocking on the door trying to conquer.
Yep.
Right? And so we celebrate him and at Pa'ula'ula with self-guided tours. You can actually use your cell phone and go up to a code and scan it, and then you'll hear the story or see a picture of the importance of that area. Michael Kiale will be there to play music, and of course we'll have hula from local halau to honor him.
Well, that whole you've really adapted to contemporary smartphone culture with that.
Yeah, you got to keep the kids interested. You
I
know?
Guess, yeah.
Can you imagine, you know, a bunch of malihini are coming, or even kama'aina. It's like, oh, man, really, an outdoor event? Yeah, but you get to use your cell phone.
Well, let's hope you can get them to look up from those phones.
Right.
It drives me crazy to see everybody staring at those things all the time. But
absolutely.
You have a kind of a rodeo tradition there as well, don't you?
We do, and our rodeo is quite famous, actually. People will plan their trips around coming to it.
Uh-huh.
It's called the Waimea Roundup Rodeo, and the proceeds of that help our high school students who are rodeo activists. So it's all day on Friday and Saturday. And on Friday, it's free, and on Saturday, there's a nominal charge. And they also have craft booths and food booths. And they honor Paniolo from Kauai and Ni'ihau every year.
Is that a tradition that, you know, you mentioned high school students taking part in the rodeo. Is that a tradition that's being kept alive as each new generation comes along?
Yeah, and we actually see, you know, as the sport progresses, we see even younger, you know, kids taking part.
Uh-huh.
You know, I see 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds participating. So, yeah, it's really wonderful, and it's a full family affair where, you know, their grandfather was a Paniolo for Gayan Robinson and helped to pass that tradition down to their children and their children's children and now their great-grandchildren.
One of the things that reminds me of Puni is that, you know, the history of the islands isn't just one history. It's each individual island has some very separate stories, including Kauai being independent of Kamehameha for years after he'd consolidated the rest of the islands, right?
Yeah, we like to refer to ourselves as being unconquered.
You've also referred to yourself as Hawaii's first visitor destination because of Captain Cook showing up there quite early.
Yes, and that was here on the west side.
Uh-huh.
And it was actually King Kaumualii's parents who had jumped in their canoe and met Captain Cook first.
So they were the first Hawaiians that he saw, huh?
Correct.
Well, you see, that's quite a story. I like the way these stories keep unfolding the deeper you look, yeah?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I really wanted to mention was, you know, this celebration, yes, is a time for us to come together as a community, but we also like to take the time to honor people from our community. So at our Ambassador of Aloha event this year, we will be honoring Chucky Boy Chalk for the work that he's done at the Kauai Museum and also helping with the Hokulea, you know, and their world voyage. He has written songs that has helped to raise money to support the Polynesian Voyaging Society.
Well,
so we're
Puni,
super excited.
We'll look forward to that. Thanks very much for talking with us this morning.
Oh, thank you so much.
You bet.
Aloha.
Puni Patrick is one of the organizers of the week-long Waimea Town Celebration in West Kauai. It starts Saturday, runs until February 20th at several different locations, and you can find out more on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the National Kidney Foundation of Hawaii, striving to increase awareness and treatment of kidney diseases affecting 1 in 7 Hawaii residents. Learn more at kidneyhi.org.
Partners in Time transports you to the Balkans and the Middle East while you remain in the comfort of HBR's Atherton Studio. Joining this popular local band on February 20th is master instrumentalist Soren Baronian, who spices things up with his jazz-infused Middle Eastern originals. Reserve your seats now at hprtickets.org or by calling 955-8821 during business hours. Sponsored by Bonnie Rice and the Rice Partnership Wealth Management.
Bethann, we're going to have a picture on our Facebook page, but I want to try to describe the costume that our friend Mark Tyrone was wearing. He's putting together the Mardi Gras celebration, and he had on a top hat that almost didn't get through the door, decorated with fleur-de-lis, a little fleur-de-lis medallion, a double-breasted gold suit. How am I doing?
Doing pretty well. Actually, I have to confess that while he was talking to you, I popped a picture onto my Twitter feed because he just looks so good. Certainly the best-dressed guy that this studio has seen in a while.
No
slur about anything else that you ever turn up in, but boy, I haven't seen you in a double-breasted suit and top hat like that.
And chances are you never will, but I tend to dress for radio. It's one of my biggest flaws.
Yeah, we like the beads. The beads look really good.
We have some beads, that's right.
Anyway, you have a very good Mardi Gras evening, and come back to be with us tomorrow when we're going to talk about a new campaign to stop distracted driving that is gearing up to launch in Honolulu, in Hawaii. We're going to talk with a sleep doctor who's here for the launch.
And we're going to talk with jazz vocalist Dee Dee Bridgewater. And we'd like to hear from you. You can call us on our talkback line, and that number is 808-792-8217. If you want to email us, talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org is that address. Post comments on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation. Tweet us at HI Conversation, our BKOZHPR.
And if you missed any of the show or want to find some other really great stuff, go to the HPR2 archive at HPR2.org.
I'm Chris Vanderkoek.
I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. We'll meet you in the morning for more of The Conversation.